So, weirdest traditions in each state. Now, Dan, I've been saying that we were going to get to this topic for 4 months.
Yes.
And we're doing it right now.
Right on, everybody.
Because some of this stuff is hilarious.
Your
a lot
requests
of
requests have been answered.
A lot of this stuff is just really weird. So I'm just going to go, we're going, this is all alphabetically, with the weirdest tradition in each state. We'll just discuss this. And if anybody has participated in any of these weird traditions, or you have weird traditions of your own, maybe within your family, that could open up another can of worms right there, like some weird traditions that you do at holidays, or weird traditions that you do certain days of the year, or for anniversaries, or for holidays, or for birthdays. 312-981-7200. So in Alabama, they have a tradition of putting wreath on Hank Williams' grave, and you do that on New Year's Day. I don't think that's weird. It's kind of cool. On New Year's Day, people are invited to place a wreath on the grave of country singing icon Hank Williams, who was buried in Montgomery. Williams was 29 years old when he passed away on January 1st, 1953. That makes sense. It doesn't seem weird to me. In Alaska, the tradition is the Nenana Ice Classic, which takes place late winter, early spring. The Nenana Ice Classic has been held since 1917. It's a contest in which people bet when the ice on the Tanana River will break up each spring. The river is adjacent to the town of Nenana. A tripod is placed on the ice and is connected to a clock. When the ice starts to crack, the tripod moves, causing the clock to stop, and that decides the winner. That's a little strange. So what do people gather around and wait for the ice to crack?
I can't imagine they would, because that would take a really long time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you would think.
But I think it's probably got like a blowhorn attached to it.
Yeah.
So as soon as somebody hears the blowhorn, it's like everybody
the
rushes
ice is
down.
Crack. Yeah, they're riding down. The ice is cracking.
It was funny because I had seen something about Alaska the other day. I forget what town it is, but because it's 24-hour sunlight at that point,
yeah,
on 4th of July, they can't do fireworks. So they just drive old cars off a cliff.
Wait. So that's the replacement?
That's the replacement for fireworks.
It's driving old cars off a cliff?
Right.
I think that's pretty awesome.
I mean, I'm sure you would prefer it.
Wow. Driving. Now, these are obviously you put like a brick on the accelerator.
Right, right.
Because obviously you're not going to have a driver go, all right, I'll drive this one off the cliff. I don't know that. Now, so here's the other thing about that. If we can get details on that somehow. Do people stand at the bottom of the cliff?
Yes. So it seems like, I'm half talking / doing it, but like from the video I saw, it seems like there's like a valley at the end of the cliff, and then there's like another kind of plateau that
so people can
stand on and watch.
Okay. Boy, I would love to. That sounds fantastic.
It is in Glacier View.
Glacier View, Alaska.
Near the toe of the Mantuska Glacier.
And so they just drive. So this is on the 4th of July.
4th of July.
And they drive old. Now, does it say where they get the cars? Are they just junkers that they have lying around? Or do people go, hey, I'm going to donate my piece of crap car. Instead of cars for kids, we're going to drive it off a cliff?
This article does not state that.
Is there a number of cars? Do they do a specific number?
It does not say the specific number, but it does. They do keep records.
Records?
Yes. So, for example, Arnie Hernser was the third car to jump. An early 90s Nissan Pathfinder reached 55 miles per hour on the 500-foot runway and traveled a distance of 100 yards in the air.
Oh, wait. No, so they're actually... There's like a contest for what goes fastest and farthest?
Apparently so.
This is getting better by the minute.
This article's light on details, but it has a huge van that you see from multiple angles. So I will post this story as well.
Okay.
Look,
I post it on the Facebook page. That's
Anchorage
pretty,
Daily News.
That's pretty great. So even vans are allowed to do it. So any type of vehicle it can be driven off this cliff on the 4th of July. See, I think I like that better than fireworks. I would rather watch cars fly off a cliff than listen to fireworks and you know, have people blowing up on M80s all night. Wow. That's pretty cool, though. So this ice classic, though, that we were talking about with the Tanana River, I like the idea of the blowhorn. I think that's a good idea. I think that's probably the best idea, because what are you going to stand out there, you know? So, I would hate that time of year in Alaska, where it's just all daylight. Oh my God, would I hate that?
I have a cousin who lives up there, and she's talked about just what a weird phenomenon it is on both ends, when it's all darkness and when it's all light.
See, I bet they're both weird, no question about it. But I would so prefer all dark. I would so prefer. Roger, what about you? All dark or all day?
Ooh!
If you had to choose, like that time period in Alaska,
I'd say all day.
Would you?
Yeah, because then if you get tired, you can pull the darkening shades down, and there's ways to make it dark to kind of keep your body clock the right way, I guess.
Yeah, I would so much rather have it dark. And my favorite time of year is
winter time.
It's like November, yeah. When like it gets dark around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's my favorite. Now, man, I mean, it's, it's the days are getting a little bit shorter, but man, still like 8 o'clock, it's still light out.
Yeah.
It makes me nuts.
I'm okay with the light. I mean, it gives you the opportunity to do more things that you would normally not be able to do because, oh gosh, it's dark. We can't see outside or something.
Well, the other thing is, Dan, if you think about this, they should have a lot of drive-ins in Alaska.
Yeah.
Because they could do business every night. Day, night, it doesn't matter. You could do 24-hour movies at drive-ins in Alaska. Of course, that's the first thing that I think of, is that. is that, wouldn't it be cool for it to be dark all the time so that we could have 24-hour drive-ins? That's the first thing that pops into my head, because I'm such a dork. All right, so cars flying off a cliff, that's another weird one. And let's see, here is George on WGN. Hey, George.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, what's up?
So my parents got really sick and tired of us screaming over who got a better gift at Christmas. So what they would do is just buy a whole bunch of just awesome family gifts, a whole pile of them, and they would write down the gift on a piece of paper and stuff it in an ornament. There were 50 ornaments every morning, in the Christmas morning. You take turns, you smash the ornament, whatever you got, you got. You didn't throw a fit.
That is cool. That's a pretty cool fit. Now, have you passed that on into your family, George?
Everybody in the family, all extended family, we all do it now.
That's so cool. I love that. I think that's a good idea. Now, how big was your family when you were growing up?
Not big. I mean, we six people.
Yeah. But still, but that settled the argument, and it became a pretty cool Christmas tradition.
Listen, if you didn't like socks, you chose it.
That's right. You're stuck with the tie because you chose that ornament.
That's right.
That seems fair, man. That seems fair and just. Right, how long you been doing this? When did that start, George?
Started when I was probably 6 years old, 5 or 6, 31 now.
Wow.
Now my wife's parents, their family does it. Our family does. I mean, it's kind of weird how it's kind of like it's grown like wildfire. It's kind of, they try and do it. They love it. I mean, it's a better way than trying to find individual gifts for each person.
No, you're absolutely right. That is fantastic, George. I think that's really, really cool. And I love the fact that it has spread amongst your in-laws and other families and stuff. That's very, very cool, George. I love that tradition.
Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Take care. That's pretty cool, right, Dan?
That solves a lot of problems.
Yeah, it certainly does, because it's fair. It's like, hey, man, you don't like socks. Sorry, but you drew that ornament. I also love the fact that you get to smash the ornament. That's
pretty cool.
Especially like if you pick a crappy gift, then the next one you're going to smash the hell out of. You know what I mean? Like you're going to take it out. It's like, I just got a pair of socks. Man, I want to break this ornament. Oh, I like that. I like that. Okay. Weird traditions in each state we're talking about. When we come back, we'll tell you all about ostrich racing in Arizona. I would like to watch that. I'll tell you right now, I would like to watch that. If you have any weird traditions that you do within your family or within your friends, or you know of any weird traditions that your town does or your state, 312-981-7200. We got some really, really funny ones coming up, and we'll tell you all about them. We'll hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200. Good choice. It's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. That means you choose it. It's anything, any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Get your requested now. We'll play them a little bit. 312-981-7200. Tom requesting some Grand Funk Railroad, Closer to Home.
Haven't heard that since college.
That song
seriously
is a jam. That great song is a
album.
Jam. They rule. Grand Funk rules. Yeah. You know who else agrees with me about that is Homer Simpson.
KFSL, Fossil 103. Classic hits from ABBA to Zeppelin. Come on, land.
We are winners and losers.
Tell him! Mr. Simpson, sir! Can you please change the radio station?
But this is Grand Funk Railroad. You guys back there know Grand Funk, right? Nobody knows the band Grand Funk? The wild shirtless lyrics of Mark Farner? The bong rattling bass of Mel Shocker? The competent drum work of Don Brewer? Oh, man.
The competent drum work of Don Brewer. That's the one of the funniest, one of my favorite lines ever. That's funny. A great episode. That's the Lollapalooza episode, right? The Homer Palooza episode. Man, that's remember when that show was good? Man. And when that show was good, it was the best show ever. There was that stretch of time, I can't even believe it, from like 92 to like 97 when there was nothing better on TV than The Simpsons. Consistently, every week, genius. So... All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. And we're talking about weird traditions. If you guys have weird traditions within your family, we would love to hear that. George had a great tradition with his family that has been passed on that involved, you know, ornament smashing and not arguing over gifts at Christmas, and it sounds like a great one to me. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about if you want to jump in, or if you have a tradition within the town that you live or whatever. Arizona, they have a tradition of ostrich racing. And that happens in early March. I believe I have my plans for early March, Dan.
Mark your calendar.
Mark your calendar because Chandler in Arizona has held its annual ostrich festival for almost 30 years. Ostriches were first brought to the United States in the 1880s. During the festival, ostrich races with riders on them. They can run up to 40 miles per hour. Now, I know that ostriches are very funny. Now, let me ask you this. Here's the weird thing, though, Dan. As part of this ostrich festival, do they eat ostrich? That's my question.
Oh, yeah.
Because that'd be a little weird, like if you're chowing down on a piece of ostrich while you're watching live ostriches running around. I don't know why that doesn't sit well with me, but my guess is if you can have an ostrich festival, you're going to serve it up. That would be my guess. You're going to eat some ostrich. That just seems weird. Although, you know, you can go to a petting zoo with a hamburger. I would imagine that, you know.
That's true.
Oh, man.
Oh, I don't know if this was this past year or next year's, but Kool and the King, John Michael Montgomery and the Beach Boys were playing special 30th anniversary show.
Kool and the Gang is
Kool
playing.
Oh, it was last year.
It was last year. Kool and the Gang played the Ostrich Fest.
That's right. Big deal, apparently.
Wow. All right. It's got to be a big deal, man. You get Kool and the Gang to play the Ostrich Festival. You know, that's not small right there. All right. How about this? On New Year's in Arkansas, they do a hog drop. Now, what's going on there? In New York, revelers bring in the new year by watching the ball drop in Times Square. In Fayetteville, Arkansas, celebrants watch a gold-painted artificial hog descend to a ring on New Year. The dropping of the hog is followed by a fireworks display. Are hogs attached to Arkansas? Am I missing something here? Are they big like a...
I think their school mascot is a hog.
Is it?
University of Arkansas.
I think you might be right, yeah. It has to have some significance, obviously. They're not going to, on New Year's Eve, not going to drop a gold hog for no reason. I don't think they randomly picked a, let's make it a gold hog.
They're the Razorbacks, which is a
the Razorbacks,
hog.
Yeah, there you go. That makes sense. All right, how about this tradition from California? A bunch of weirdos live out there. Speaking of weirdos, Esmeralda's back from California tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
let's see. California on July 4th. See, I don't care, because I'll be in Alaska watching cars flying off cliffs. That's the... They have the marshmallow fight. People at Ogden Beach in California mark the founding of the nation by holding a marshmallow fight. The tradition began in the 1980s when two families pelted each other with the gooey treats. The event grew in popularity, and city residents were fearful that the exuberance was getting out of control. In recent years, the events has marshmallowed a bit. Oh, God. So what do you mean gooey treats? Do they toast them? Because marshmallows aren't gooey. They'll bounce off of you.
It does look like there is a bonfire going on
picture. So you whip gooey melted marshmallows at each other. That sounds like a cleanup.
Worse, if you've put them in the fire to soften them up, they're flaming when you throw them.
Well, you blow the flames out and then whip them at somebody's face. That's
Are you sure that's a rule?
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe you get it to merit if you throw a flaming marshmallow at somebody. I happen to be one of these people that when I toast a marshmallow to a crisp, to an absolute crisp, it's completely blackened until I let the flame burn all the way out till it dies out, then I eat it. That's the way I like my marshmallows. That's the way I like, and I know that's weird, Dan. I know that's weird, right?
What's wrong?
Yeah. I mean, you're not. There's no taste anymore. It's just
no. There's taste
inside.
No. Yeah, it's all gooey and melty, and it's got a nice crisp burnt edge to it. I was always like people. Whenever we would do like campfires, or we would do any of that stuff. I don't, you know, and like s'mores for me. I'm not a big s'mores guy, but I would eat marshmallows. I'd burn them to a crisp. And people would be like, what is wrong with you? Like, the entire flame, I would let it die out. I don't think I've ever blown out a flame on a marshmallow that I was toasting. I would always let the flame die out. Complete black. So, I don't think I'd get much traction at a marshmallow fight with the way that I wouldn't be very good, right?
No. Nope.
I would fail miserably at a marshmallow fight.
Oh, it would take you forever to get one to burn out completely.
Yeah, everybody. Meanwhile, I'll be getting pelted. Be like a Sam Peckinpah movie with marshmallows. All right, we got a break here. More weird traditions from state to state, and we want to hear from you. What are some of your family traditions and other unusual stuff? 312-981-7200. The news is next. Can I say how pleased I am with Wild Card Wednesday so far? Spinal Tap, Grand Funk, now Tull? What the hell's happening? Saga next? Wild Card Wednesday. Thank you, people. Wild Card Wednesday, man. Get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, anything. 847, requesting Jethro Tull and Locomotive Breath. How are you, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Speaking of rock and roll, we're going to talk a little bit later on about the best front women in rock. The ladies of rock, man. Yeah. That's coming up. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5, and my main man, Steve Cochran, has your morning drive at 6 right here on 720 WGN. We're talking about weird traditions, and I have specifically one weird tradition for each state. And we're talking about some of these events and some of these weird traditions that happen. And what are some of the weird traditions maybe you have in your family, or weird traditions that happen in your town or that you've participated in? 312-981-7200. And let's see, here we got some texts coming in with some weird tradition stuff. 765 area code. says it. Where's 765, Dan? Do we know where 765 area code is? I don't understand.
Indiana.
Indiana. Thank you, Indiana. As a transplant from Indiana to Ohio, oh, I see. I have been a witness to odd traditions in the Buckeye State. When they go on vacation, they will take pictures where they have four people spell out Ohio with their arms a la YMCA. Also, Hang On Sloopy is the state rock song, and it's sung during Indians games. During the stretch. We do have delicious mustard, though. Yes, you do have delicious mustard. You have the best mustard in the country. Absolutely. Bertman's Ballpark Mustard from Cleveland. Best mustard ever. Hang On Sloopy. I don't remember. I've been to a couple of tribe games, Dan. I don't remember Hang On Sloopy during the stretch.
I did double check. There are videos of it on YouTube of people in the stands.
I'm sure I just didn't remember. I've been to two games. No, four games in Cleveland. And I don't remember that. I do remember the mustard, however. Yeah, that first time when we went to Cleveland, man. Got a hot dog, went over to the dispenser, put some mustard on it, threw some onions on it, took a bite, went, oh, my God. Went up to the counter, and I said, what's the deal with this mustard? And the person behind the counter said, you're not from Cleveland, are you? And I'm like, no. Joe wanted to steal the entire container, like the gallon pump container. Hey, listen, you divert their attention. I'm taking this damn thing with us. This is the best mustard I've ever had in my life. Dan, have you had Bertman's Ballpark mustard?
I have not. What's it like?
Oh, it's a brown mustard. It's spicy, not too overly spicy. It's thick, and not overly thick. I don't even know how to describe it. It is a beautiful brown mustard that, and I'm not kidding. One bite into the hot dog, and I went, "Where did this mustard come from?" And to this day, I have it in my fridge at home right now. That's the mustard I use, and. It's the best. It's the best mustard ever. Yeah. Roger, have you ever had Bertman's Ballpark mustard?
No, I can't say I have.
It's from Cleveland, but you can get it anywhere. You can also get it at the Mustard Museum.
Oh.
And it's the best mustard. I'm telling you, seriously, it made me stop in my tracks. The first time I went to Cleveland for a ball game, I took one bite of the hot dog and went, oh, my God. And it happened to all of us, all my friends, because we were on a baseball trip. There were like five guys, this was really hygienic, five guys in a van driving across the country on baseball trip, going to different stadiums and to the Hall of Fame. So we went all East Coast. It was very weird, though, Dan. How would the schedule worked out?
Mm-hmm.
They were all American League parks that we went to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a National League guy, which was really strange. And this was in 92, so there was no interleague, so it was nothing but American League teams we saw. But we went. This was when Cleveland was still municipal before Jake. What's it called now? Why do I always
progressive?
But anyway,
was it a dark mustard?
It's a brown mustard. It's Bertman's, Bertman.
Okay.
And I mean, you can look it up. You can see a picture of it. It's also available at the Mustard Museum. You can order it, and have it delivered. I have friends who are from Cleveland, who when they go back home to Cleveland, they always bring a bottle back for me, even though I can now get it in Chicago. I think you can get it. The ones that I got, because Barry Levinson, who joins us, who just joined us earlier this morning to talk about the National Mustard Day, always sends me Bertman's, a couple of bottles of Bertman's, and it lasts me a little bit longer. But I think you can get it at locally, maybe not at the Jewels, but I think you can get it maybe at some specialty shops or something. I just don't remember Hang On Sloopy. I don't doubt this at all, obviously, but I don't remember it. I've been to a few Indians games, and I don't remember that during the stretch. So, 870 area code says, the turkey drop episode on WKRP was based on a real thing. It was? Oh, that's so ridiculous. In Yellville, Arizona?
They do a turkey drop?
I don't think they do it anymore, but I think the incident, because if you've obviously you've seen the episode of KRP.
Yeah.
but you know, what's his line? I swear, by God, I thought turkeys could fly.
Yeah.
As a classic episode, I didn't know it was based on reality, which is terrifying.
I didn't either.
815 area code says, you should try frozen marshmallows. They don't freeze solid. They just get cold and chewy.
Oh. That's like having a marshmallow sitting around in an open bag for like 3 weeks.
Well, those are the kind that you want to gun at people at the marshmallow fight.
First of all, they go straight.
Yeah.
They don't flop around in the wind.
That's right. Not that I've ever participated in a marshmallow fight.
No.
So, all right.
More information about the Yellowville, Arkansas turkey drop.
Oh, it's Arkansas. Okay.
Yep. So the thinking behind the toss drop was that most of the turkeys would escape from the wild and therefore increase the local population. The problem is that while rural turkeys can fly, they are accustomed to a much lower to the ground from tree to tree. Some of the drop birds would expire on impact. Some that landed safely ended up being chased around town. The splattering and tracing drew unwelcome national media attention in the 70s and 80s, and animal rights group threatened legal action. Since 1990, Yellville has officially divorced itself of the turkey drop.
Wait a minute. They did it more than once? It was just like it was a thing?
Oh, my God.
To kill a bunch of turkeys every year? I mean, because I thought they didn't think it through, and they only did it once. But no, it was an actual tradition?
Yep.
That's horrifying. That is horrifying. But it did turn out to be a great episode of TV, though, on KRP. All right. How about this one? Colorado, Dan. Frozen dead guy days.
What?
Happens 3 days in March. Frozen dead guy days. Frozen dead guy days are coffin races held in Nederland, Colorado. The competition consists of 6 pallbearers who carry another team member in a coffin over an obstacle course of snow and mud. The event is named after a man who passed away in 1989 and is kept in cryogenic state in a shed in Netherlands. What? The event, which began in 2001, also includes a salmon toss and a hearse parade.
Wow.
What are we talking about here? Maybe it's Nederland. It's N-E-D-E-R. Maybe it's Nederland. Nederland, Colorado. What is the population here? This has got to be a small town. This has got to be a real small town. 6 pallbearers carrying another team and the member in a coffin over an obstacle course of snow and mud, and there's a dude who's in a cryogenic state in a shed?
Nederland.
Nederland, okay.
And population 1,445.
That's about right.
As of the 2010 United States.
That's about right. That sounds about right. Town of 1,400 carrying dead guys around in a... Now, why would they put this guy in a... Is there a story? Dan, can you find a story behind this dude who's passed away in 98 and he's in a cryogenic
state? Wait, so each year it's the same dude?
It's the same guy. It's one guy. He's he's frozen. He's like Ted Williams. He's frozen. So, well, I don't understand, because you've got a hearse parade, you got guys running around, and what the hell does a salmon toss have to do with that? Well, I mean, do you kill the salmon and then throw it? Is that what you do?
Maybe they've got a river somewhere nearby and a lot of salmon.
Well, they have to be dead, because it's frozen dead guy day. Three, and this goes on for 3 days? They do this for 3 days. 3 days in March.
Yeah, apparently there's a fan film about it.
Oh
too.
No! Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, is it on YouTube?
I don't know. Doesn't say the title in this Wikipedia thing.
Frozen Dead Guy Days. It's 3 days in March. That sounds ridiculous. And this dude who's frozen, we have to find out what happened to this guy and why he's frozen. Because it's Frozen Dead Guy. That's what they named him after, the one guy.
There's an official video.
There's an official video.
Frozen Dead Guy Days 2017 official video.
Oh, so last year's...
Oh, wait. 2018. Coffin kissing.
They have coffin kissing.
Yeah.
So we just missed this. It was 4 months ago.
Yeah.
Dan, what were we doing 4 months ago? Why weren't we at the Frozen Dead Guy days?
Exactly.
I was tossing salmon. I didn't know that I could do it there.
Yeah.
Elevation, 8,200 feet.
Mm-hmm.
In 1989, a Norwegian citizen named Trygver Bog brought the corpse of his recently deceased grandfather, Brito, to the United States. The body was preserved on dry ice for the trip and stored in liquid nitrogen at the TransTime Cryonics facility in California. In 1983, Brito was returned to dry ice and transplanted to the town of Nederland, where Trygver and his mom, Odd, planned to create a cryonics facility of their own. When Trygver was deported from the United States for overstaying his visa,
the guy was deported. There's a shock.
His mother, Odd, continued keeping his father's body cryogenically frozen in a shack behind her unfurnished home.
Oh my God. All right, so it's got to be, it can't be happening anymore, right? I mean, this had to be years ago, obviously 1989.
The Blues Brothers.
Go ahead.
A coffin with guys dressed up as Chicago police officers. This is hilarious. You've got to see this video.
Okay.
Frozen Dead Guy Days, 2018.
All right.
In 1995, the body was discovered. Odd was forced to pay a fine.
Wait a minute. What kind of fine? What on the rule book?
600 bones.
600 bucks for right. What? You can't have a frozen dead body in your shed?
The story caused a sensation. In response, the city added a broad new provision to its municipal code. Keeping of bodies was outlawed, whether it was the whole or any part of the body. However, because of the publicity had arisen, they made an exception for Brito, a literal grandfather clause.
Oh.
True Odd secured the services of Delta Tech, a local environmental company, to keep the cryogenic facility running. Bo Schaffler, the CEO, who is locally known as the Iceman, has kept up the cryogenics.
That is outstanding.
I have yet to see the frozen body yet in this. They got bands. What band?
Well, I mean, clearly they're just. I mean, this has just been, you know, because it started in 2001.
Yeah.
So they're just celebrating. That's huge. Pretty funny. 3 days, though. 3 days of that. All right. We got a break here. That's fantastic. All right. Colorado. These are trips that I'm planning. You know, I'm going to the Frozen Dead Guy Days in March.
Do you think that Bertrand can put together a trip?
Well, he can put together a trip. We'll do a remote. Dan, what do you think? We'll do a remote from Frozen Dead Guys Day?
Yeah, that one's all you. I'll do the remote, so I'll do the studio side.
All right. We got a break here, and we'll come back with more. You got weird traditions in your family or your town? We got more weird traditions to go through here in this country. Wildcard Wednesday continues. You hear me? Wildcard Wednesday. That's any artist, any song, and a thin. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's also the phone number and the text that you can contact us. We are talking about some strange traditions, maybe weird traditions that you have in your family or the town that you live in. And we're going state by state here with some weird traditions. And here's Connecticut. Turkeys painted neon colors. This is just happens weeks before Thanksgiving. Each year, the turkeys at One Turkey Farm in Gulford, Connecticut, are painted in neon colors ahead of Thanksgiving. The dye is not toxic and vegetable-based. The tradition began 45 years ago by the turkey farm owner's grandmother to entertain the children. See, at least they're not killing them. They're not throwing them on planes and stuff. I mean, painting them and the paint is safe? That seems better, right? Now, do they eat them? That's the thing. They probably do, right? Again,
it's Thanksgiving time.
It is Thanksgiving time. Again, it's one of those deals where, like, if you're eating ostriches at an ostrich race, you clearly are going to eat a turkey during neon colored. Oh, look at the cute turkeys. These neon. Let's go home and eat turkey. Okay. All right. How about Delaware? They have Return Day. It's Thursday after Election Day. Return Day is a Delaware tradition and a state holiday in which officials from the Democratic and Republican parties meet in Georgetown to, quote-unquote, bury the hatchet to end differences arising from the recently concluded election campaign. Officials meet on stage and together stuff a hatchet in a box of sand. Yeah. You think that's going to happen this year? I don't know.
Hatchet may go somewhere else.
Exactly right. I don't know if the way that the Republicans and the Democrats are getting along now. I don't think I need a hatchet anywhere near that facility.
Could you see a misdirect by one of the guys? Like they're all holding the hatchet, getting ready to go in the sand. One goes, "Oh, look over there!"
Yeah,
and
boom, there goes your foot. All right, return day. That's in Delaware. Okay, in Florida, the Lower Keys Underwater Music Festival. That happens on the 4th of July. Again, I'll be watching cars flying off of cliffs in Alaska. This music festival is an offbeat concert held to bring attention to reef preservation. The music is broadcast to divers and snorkelers underwater from speakers located in boats above the reef. It is an ocean-themed. Hundreds of boats assemble at the site, which is about 6 miles south of Big Pine Key. So they blast music so that the divers and the snorkelers hear it?
Guess so.
All right. That's a little weird. But it's calling attention to reef preservation, which is a good good thing. In Georgia, they drop a possum at New Year's. I really hope it's a fake possum, right?
A stuffed possum.
Oh, a stuffed possum. Yes. Okay. And this happens on New Year's. Every New Year's in Tallapoosa, Georgia, residents drop a stuffed possum named Spencer. Hey, it's Spencer the possum. Who named this dude? Who is encased in a wire frame ball that is covered in lights to bring in the new year. The possum is roadkill retrieved by a man who had it preserved by a taxidermist. The possum was named after a local businessman. The tradition of dropping Spencer began in the early 2000s. The guy picked up roadkill and had it stuffed? Okay, so Spencer's named after a local businessman. I bet that guy's thrilled. So they dropped Spencer, and that began in the early 2000s. All right. Okay, weird tradition in Hawaii, eating spam. There's nothing weird about that. I take offense to the fact that this is part of an article about weird traditions in states. Because there's absolutely nothing weird about eating spam. When does this take place? Anytime in Hawaii. Spam, the canned cooked meat, has been ridiculed since its inception. I don't ridicule it. I praise it. But don't make fun of it in Hawaii, where it is eaten all over the island. Spam, short for spiced ham, was introduced to the islands during World War II when it was served to American soldiers. The meat did not need to be refrigerated and has a long shelf life. Spam can be found on McDonald's and Burger King menus in Hawaii. There's nothing weird about that. I just think that that's... I would love Spam to be available at fast food restaurants here in Illinois. Get some McDonald's Spam, McSpam. But you get Spam everywhere in Hawaii. I mean, it's like you can go to a fine dining restaurant in Hawaii and get Spam. It's like a big... It's like a deal there. Once again, not weird, as far as I'm concerned. All right, here's the tradition in Idaho. Dan, you know this one already.
Oh, I forgot. I've forgotten a good chunk of them, because there's so many.
Oh, right. Well, Idaho, what does it involve?
A potato.
Yeah, that's right. Potato drop on New Year's. I'd rather drop that. I like Spencer. I prefer Spencer.
You'll eat the potato and let Spencer do the work.
That's right. At the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve, people in Idaho lower a glowing potato replica from a crane in front of the Capitol building in Boise. The tradition is less than 10 years old, but it's grown in popularity, with around 35,000 people attending the festivities in 2017. All right, before we break, let's tell you what Illinois is, and we've covered this story, Dan, several times. In Illinois, it's no pants subway ride.
Mm-hmm.
Happens once a year, and it's insane because it's usually in January. It's usually in winter,
right?
The Merry Pranksters of Art Troupe Improv Everywhere organize an annual no-pants subway ride in Chicago's subway cars. Participants have to be hardy folks because this year's event was held in January. The ride took place on the city's Red Line this past year. We've covered that. We've talked about that several times. No-pants subway ride. So there's your weird tradition for Illinois. Do we have other weird traditions? Anybody out there, Illinois, your town? Your city right here in this crazy state of Illinois? There's got to be some more weird things other than the no pants subway ride, right?
I was surprised that that was the one they went with. I mean, I don't know any off the top of my head, but yeah. Like you would just figure that there's something else.
There's got to be something else. Let's hear from people who are living in Illinois and in the other states too, because we're going to do Indiana when we come back after the news. But you know, besides the no pants subway ride, which is weird and but fun, and especially weird because it takes place in January when it's like 80 below, walking around with no pants. I bet Johnny B has been a part of that.
I was going to say, or they were listening to your show.
That's right, and it knocked their pants off. Remember when we had to do that brilliant little catchphrase? I was told by management that I should come up with something like knocking your pants off. That was a good idea. It was a great idea. Oh, that was a weird time at this radio station. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we got more weird traditions. And if you're in Illinois and your town or place has a weird tradition that's weirder than the no pants subway ride, or just as weird, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. News is next. Definitely Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. It's any artist, any song, anything. Then 301 area code wanted to hear the theme from the Big Country.
Okay.
Yeah. It's Nick DiGilio here. How you doing? 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here 18 stories above downtown Chicago. Man, it's really getting cold in this studio. But, you know, I think we have thermostats that we can control in here, right?
Yeah, they're supposed to be every room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Tribune.
Tribune, where we were
at the mercy of
the boiler room. Yeah. Call it the boiler room. Go, you know, it's 53 degrees in here.
And the guy.
But I'll fix that. I'll do when we next time we have a break. I'll start messing with the thermostat and see what happens.
Okay.
Next thing I know, it'll be 150 degrees in here. Because I'm such a moron. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking about weird traditions with each state. And the weird one here in Illinois that they chose to pick was no pants subway ride. But I think there are other traditions in this state, in and around the state, that have to be just as weird or weirder. And we also are talking about like your family traditions or your town traditions that might be a little strange. 312-981-7200. We're also going to talk about the greatest front women in rock and roll history. Rock chicks, man. Yeah! That'll be coming up. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. Here on WGN, we're talking about weird traditions, and we're at Indiana. And if you guys want to talk a little bit about your weird traditions, here's what they say for Indiana. The weird tradition is tractor pull, which can happen at any time. Indiana, a haven for high school basketball, loves other sports. Those include tractor pulling, in which tractors pull a metal sled stuffed with weights over a designated course. The tractor that pulls the weight the farthest wins. Again, I don't think that's so weird. Dan, I don't think that's so weird.
No, and don't they have like a Robert just called in. Apparently, like Western Illinois does a tricycle race and kind of, you know. there's the Indy 500 that happens at Indianapolis University where it's like people ride around on kids' bikes or something. That's like legendary.
Right, it happens right around the Indy 500?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, I forgot one for Illinois. Carbondale every year at SIU has cardboard boat races.
Cardboard boat races.
They fashion boats out of cardboard boxes, and they race in the water.
Okay.
Doesn't get very far, but...
No, I would imagine. Imagine
they've been doing
far.
That for several decades now.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, but the tricycle racing thing... Dan, completely reminds me of Revenge of the Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, yeah. That's probably where they got the idea.
But if I remember correctly, in Revenge of the Nerds, you had to ride the tricycle. You ride it around a track, but you have to stop every once in a while and chug a beer and then ride more. Because I remember the Asian character is the guy who's on the... And he took, like, some medication or something. He took a pill to stop off the drunkenness or something like that. I don't remember. I just saw that movie last year at my film club screening because Curtis Armstrong, Booger, was there live. So, you know, this next one, Iowa, this next one, I hope Orion is listening. Because their weird tradition in Iowa is viewing a cow made of butter.
I think I've heard him talk about this in the past.
Oh, yeah. The Iowa State Fair is a very big deal. For a lot of people, one of the highlights is seeing a cow made entirely of butter. There have been five people who have sculpted the cow out of butter since the first one was sculpted in 1911. Sarah Pratt became the fifth sculptor in 2006. Butter cows weigh about 600 pounds, just a few hundred pounds shy of the real ones, which tilt the scales at about 1,000 pounds. So this is, now, Orion, you know, has talked about this forever. So this is during the Iowa State Fair, which is in August. It's, August is obviously state fair time. That's when a lot of them, you know, mid to late August is when a lot of the state fairs happen. And Orion, of course, is the state fair king, the king of state fairs, and always talks about the butter cow. And it's kept in a refrigerated unit. And then I forget what they do with the butter afterwards. I can't remember what they do with the butter afterwards, but I don't think you can use it. unless they recycle it somehow. I'm not really sure. But I know that they do something with the butter afterwards. And I remember all that. But in order to view it, you have to go into this like a refrigerated area at the fair and go in and look at the cow. Now, I've seen pictures of the cow, and it's pretty amazing.
According to iowastatefair.org, each year much of the butter is recycled and can be reused for up to 10 years.
Oh, recycled to make another cow.
I guess, yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, you can't, butter doesn't last for 10 years.
Thank God.
Dan hates butter. And did you know that, Roger, that Dan hates butter? No, Roger's not there.
Looking at this thing gives me the willies.
Just looking at the butter cow?
Yep.
Okay. So you would not, if you went to the Iowa State Fair, you would skip the butter cow?
I would go see it.
Yeah.
Just don't make...
You wouldn't have to taste it.
Yeah, I was holding off because I didn't want to be, but go ahead. That's 312, everybody.
Yeah, there you go. All right, in Kansas, taking a photo with the biggest ball of twine, and you can do that anytime. We talked about this before, the ball of twine. The largest ball of twine is in Cawker City, Kansas, and people come for miles to get their photo taken with it. A farmer named Frank Stober began winding the twine ball in 1953, and people continue adding to it to this day. If unwound, the twine would extend about 8 million feet. Kansas residents consider the twine one of the eight wonders of Kansas. One of the eight wonders of Kansas? Is the band Kansas one of them? Because it should be. All right, how about Kentucky? Burying a bottle of bourbon at wedding site. Anytime before the wedding, besides college basketball and thoroughbred horses, Kentucky is known for its bourbon. One of the traditions in the bluegrass state is for a bride and groom to bury a bottle of bourbon at the wedding site to keep rain from ruining their big day. The burial must take place no later than a month prior than the wedding. The bottle must be full and placed upside down in the ground. After the ceremony, the bottle is dug up and its contents imbibed by the wedding guests. So exactly how does that keep it from raining, Dan?
I've got nothing there.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of a cool, you know,
yeah,
kind of
that's
a cool
nice.
Tradition.
Yeah.
Kind of a cool tradition. I'm just not sure that burying a bottle of bourbon upside down in the ground is going to keep it from raining.
I do have the Eight Wonders of Kansas if you're interested.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Eight Wonders of Kansas. What do we got?
We got the Big Well in Greensburg. The Cheyenne Bottoms Wildlife Refuge.
Uh-huh.
The Cosmosphere, which focuses on various astronaut and NASA-related...
The Cosmosphere.
Mm-hmm. The Dwight D. Eisenhower Presidential Library and Museum.
Oh, okay.
The Kansas Underground Salt Museum.
All right.
The Monument Rocks in Castle Rock in Gove County. Mm. St. Fidelis Catholic Church. And the Tallgrass Prairie National Preserve and the Flint Hills Chase County.
You know, the ball of twine doesn't belong on that list as far as I'm concerned, because some of those things sound pretty great, right?
Some of the runners-up include the Big Brutus, which is one of the world's largest operating cranes.
Seriously? That's like a wonder? A big crane?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
The Pawnee Indian Museum State.
Mm-hmm.
The Gyp Hills Scenic Drive.
This is all in Kansas, everybody. Marking this down?
Yep. The John Stewart Curry murals, which I believe was on the cover of a Kansas album.
Mm-hmm.
Constitution Hall State Historic Site. Cimarron National Grassland.
Just amazing stuff to do in Kansas.
Brookfield Hotel.
In the Brookfield Hotel?
Yep.
Okay. Hey, here's a, speaking of hotels and traditions, the Ducks at the hotel. Where, why am I blanking? It's Memphis, right? It's Memphis.
Peabody.
The Peabody Hotel in Memphis.
Correct.
Oh, look at that. That's what's on the list here.
Oh, nice.
I just went to Tennessee, keeping live ducks in the Peabody Hotel fountain. The good people of Memphis are determined to keep live ducks in the fountain at the venerable Peabody Hotel. The tradition started in 1932 when the hotel's general manager and his friend returned from a hunting trip and placed live duck decoys in Peabody's fountain. Live fowl in the fountain proved to be a hit. Each day at 11 a.m., the ducks marched to the fountain to the strains of John Philip Sousa's King Cotton March and returned to the rooftop residence at 5. So I've been there for that. I have seen this. My first wife and I, our honeymoon was, we road trip Memphis to New Orleans. And we stayed in Memphis for a couple of days before. We went to New Orleans, then we stayed in New Orleans for like a week, and then we went back and stayed in Memphis for another few days. And we stayed at the Peabody on the way back, and we saw the ducks. It's insane. Dan, have you ever seen footage of it?
I have seen footage of it.
It's cool. Really crazy. It's cool as hell. So what they do is the ducks, like, are treated like kings at this place. They live in the penthouse. Like, there's a floor in the penthouse of the Peabody where the ducks live. That's where they live, and they're treated like royalty, and they're given, you know, they're fed, and they're taken care of, and they're nurtured. And then at 11 a.m., they all the ducks walk into an elevator, an express elevator. So you see all the ducks go into the elevator. And then they have, so you're in the lobby, and the elevator comes down to the lobby where the fountain is, and there are, like, velvet ropes, like it's a Hollywood premiere, and a red carpet that's rolled out. I'm not making this up. This is absolutely true. So they have, like, the velvet ropes, and everybody stands around with their cameras, and, like, hundreds of people, you know, in the lobby of this hotel. People, you know, obviously not everybody staying there, but people who are visiting. We were happened to be staying there. And we had our cameras, and everybody stands there like it's a Hollywood premiere on either side of the velvet ropes. The carpet is done, and then the elevator door opens up, and a bunch of ducks come out. And a bunch of ducks just walk past you. You take pictures of them, and then they climb into the fountain. They swim around the fountain, and they stay there all day. And then you come back at 5 o'clock, and you line up again at the velvet ropes. The carpet is there. The ducks come out of the fountain, they walk back into the elevator, and then they go back upstairs to their penthouse suite. That's weird, and it's awesome. I mean, it's really awesome. And it was actually, we had a blast watching that. Like, that was so much fun. And the ducks, whack, 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 and they're all making noise and stuff as they come out of the elevator. And it's just so insane to see elevator doors open up and a bunch of ducks just come out.
Was there a guy in a fancy suit, red suit?
Yeah, oh yeah, 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 yeah. No,
I'm watching a video now.
Yeah, no. It's taken very seriously.
Yeah.
And they have somebody help guide the ducks, because otherwise they might walk all over the just start walking all over the lobby. They help kind of guide the ducks along, but the ducks, they know where they're going because they do it every day. And they go right into the fountain. Then they spend the day in the fountain. Then you come back at 5 o'clock and you watch them walk into the elevator and go back up.
This is so cute. They're swimming around and around and around. They're not getting out. They're not trying to get away.
No, they stay in the fountain all day. And it's hilarious because they rock, 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 rock. The best part is, like, the elevator door opens up and, like, all you hear, rock, 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 rock. It's just amazing. All right, we got a break here. That's great. The Peabody Hotel. That's a fun tradition. All right, we'll be right back. For a minute, I got all excited. I thought a Gilmore Girls episode had started. Great Carole King, I Will Follow. It's the theme from the Gilmore Girls. 847 area code. Thank you for that request. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in at 312-981-7200. Gilmore Girls. So we've got some weird traditions that we've been talking about here. In Louisiana, pinning $1 to the lapel of a birthday celebrant. And that happens on someone's birthday. There are plenty of superstitions and customs down in the bayou. One of the quirkier ones is to pin a dollar bill on the lapel of a shirt of someone celebrating his or her birthday. The idea is to get more people to follow suit and create a cash corsage. The money is then used to buy drinks for the birthday celebration. Really? Buying drinks in Louisiana? That's what you do? That's what you do with your money in Louisiana? So, yeah. There you go. Maine Valentine's Day bandit. Why didn't we know about this? Because, you know, we do the anti-Valentine's Day show. This happens on Valentine's Day. Well, I'm glad because, you know, the Valentine's Day bandit shouldn't, I don't think it should happen on Arbor Day. On Valentine's Day in 1976, red hearts printed on paper began to appear in storefronts, windows, and telephone poles in Portland. No one claimed credit or responsibility for the deed. In the years that followed, the so-called Valentine's Day bandit left red hearts on federal buildings and police cars. The bandit also hung a giant heart at the Civic Center in 1984. The unknown bandit continues this tradition to this day. He's not a bandit. What's he? He's not stealing anything. He's leaving stuff. Does that make him? That's not a bandit, right? Isn't a bandit?
That is a good question. Definition of bandit coming up.
And can we get the sexy lady to pronounce it correctly for us? let's see.
You know, bandit.
What happened there? Oh, that was bandit.
That was also the YouTube ad that was still playing. Oh, hang on. Here we go. Here we go. Here's your girl.
Here we go.
Bandit.
Thank you.
A robber or outlaw belonging to a gang and typically operating in an isolated or lawless area.
Yeah, right? He's not a bandit.
And Morgana would be a bandit because she was stealing kisses.
She was stealing kisses, right? But this Valentine's dude is not a... He's just a dude. He's the Valentine's deliverer. He's the Valentine lever. He Valentine's Day lever.
Modern day Cupid.
Yeah. Okay. 870 area code says, somewhere in Alabama, they drop a moon pie for New Year's. Memphis drops a Gibson guitar. I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
That's very cool. Has Steve King ever been to New Year's Eve in Memphis? Because that sounds like he should be there. I think Steve should be there every year, don't you? Dan, now you hosted New Year's Eve with them, right?
Yes.
Did they ever do the guitar drop? Did they ever go to Memphis?
They never, not that I can remember. They usually spent those days in Florida when they weren't here.
Yeah. Well, they didn't cover it on the show, right, when they would do New Year's Eve?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, man, there's something.
Because Memphis is the same time zone as us, right? So they would
just be covered. It is the same time zone, yeah. But still, maybe you could have, like, if Steve and Johnny, I don't know who's hosting New Year's Eve this year. Not going to be me, but
I think they were part of the reason why they're checking out these studios was to get a vibe for
New Year's Eve. They've got to do something with Memphis then. If there's a Gibson guitar drop, come on. How did they not? I mean, that's right up their alley. They should be covering that. Osvaldo and Bobby D, I believe there is a naked bike ride in the city of Chicago. Yes, it is. There's a naked bike ride, and I used to sit in the Showcase studio and watch a bunch of naked people, thousands of naked people, riding down Michigan Avenue. It's in June. Happens in June. And as I've said, every time I would watch that, you know, the naked people fly by, too many dongs and not enough boobs. That was always my complaint. Always my complaint. 815 area code says, Crystal.
That was the same complaint about your college radio show, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, man! Me and Broccoli Rob, man. Yeah. It's a dong-free zone. 815 area code says, Crystal Lake, Illinois has a cardboard regatta where people make all kinds of cardboard boats, and some of them go very, very far and fast. All right. That's very much like what were they talking about at SIU. All right. Whoa, we have commercials here. All right, I have to do some commercials. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, more weird traditions, and we're going to talk about front women and rock chicks. That's all coming up right here on WGN. If you want to get in here, it's 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, 303 Wacker. And we are here till 5 a.m., and we're talking about weird traditions. If you want to jump in, 312-981, and then we're going to segue into the great front women of rock. That was a Wild Card Wednesday request from Roger, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer from the beginning, which is a classic rock song that Bird has played many times. So there you go. And you, do you ever listen to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer?
Can't say that I know other anything but the hits.
Yeah. They were also known as ELP. So when Carl Palmer would not return, because it's Keith Emerson, Greg Lake, Carl Palmer. When Carl Palmer would not return, they hired Cozy Powell so that they could still be called ELP.
That'll do it.
And they released an album in the 80s. Under the name ELP, and it was Emerson, Lake, and Powell. But and Cozy Powell, by the way, great drummer. He's not as good as Carl Palmer, but he's a great drummer. But I think it's pretty funny that they hired a dude so they wouldn't have to change the name. They hired Cozy Powell.
I got introduced to him in college.
I think a lot of people get introduced to them in college. So also get introduced to weed right around the same time.
I had nothing to do with one or the other. I just hanging around in the music library at the radio station.
Right. And blowing weed.
No.
Keith Emerson passed away a few years ago. Dan, can you find out how long ago that was? Keith Emerson passed away. He was such a great keyboard player and an amazing keyboard player and a great composer as well. He composed the music for the Sylvester Stallone movie Nighthawks.
Ah, 2016.
2016, he passed away, man. 2 years ago. Wow. But yeah, he composed the music for Nighthawks. And the score is fantastic. The movie's terrible, but the score is fantastic. That's one of those, as you know, Dan, I have a term for, I have certain terms for movies that are based on Sylvester Stallone movies, Roger.
Oh, I didn't know this.
If you know this or not.
No.
But when you Nighthawk a movie.
Oh, I think I remember.
This is when you go back and watch a movie that you thought was great.
Yes.
And it turns out to suck.
Yeah.
Which is the case of Nighthawks. Because when I was 16 years old when that movie came out, I saw it like 5 times in the theater and 18 times on cable. And then, like years later, I'm an adult and I'm like, ooh, Nighthawks is on.
Yeah.
20 minutes in, I'm like, this movie sucks. And the other one is Ramboing. Ramboing is when you saw a movie and hated it, and then you go back years later and now you love it.
Right.
Because I hated Rambo, the First Blood Part 2. I love the first one. First Blood is still my favorite Stallone movie and my favorite Stallone performance. I like it even more than the Rocky movies. I think First Blood is a legitimately great film, and I think Stallone is great in it. But Rambo, I remember seeing Rambo going, what the hell is this? Thinking it was ridiculous. Now I love it. So that's Ramboing. And then the other one is Rhinestoning.
Not Rhinestone Cowboy.
No, the movie Rhinestone.
Oh.
He was in a movie
with
Rhinestone.
Dolly Parton?
That's right. And Rhinestoning is when you have a movie with two people who should not be in the movie together, who should not be couples. And another one that falls under that category is Dolly Parton again in Straight Talk.
Oh, God, what a horrible movie.
In her romantic lead in that movie? James Woods.
Yeah, no.
So, there you go.
Horrible matchup.
Yeah. But Keith Emerson, God bless him. And the score for Nighthawks, I had the soundtrack. I used to listen to it all the time. The score for Nighthawks is great. Rutger Hauer's great in it. Movie's terrible. It's so bad. And I saw it like 12 times when I was 16. It was high school. My friends and I were like, man, Nighthawks is the greatest movie ever. It's so bad. It's so terrible. But Rutger Hauer is above. See, to me, Rutger Hauer is above everything that he does.
He's good in everything.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's great in everything. And even if he's not good in something or he's in a bad movie, he's Roy Batty from Blade Runner. So that he gets a lifetime pass.
Oh, okay.
He gets a lifetime pass. He can do whatever he wants.
What was the one where he was the ex-military guy who was the swordsman, Blind Justice or something like that?
I don't think it's Blind Justice. Blind Fury.
Okay, possibly. But that one, again.
Blind Fury.
The movie sucked.
He was great.
So stupid.
Yeah.
But he was awesome.
He's great in everything.
Yeah.
He Rutger Hauer rules. All right, we're talking about weird traditions here. And we got Paxton on the line. Hey, Paxton.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Good all right.
Topic. You have to remember the Poe toaster in Baltimore who would leave. Would leave cognac and roses on Poe's grave.
Right. That's right.
And then people would chase him around try to get him, and they could never catch him. And then it was researched, why cognac? But Poe never, there's a Strypticon where you could look up every word that was ever used by Poe.
Yeah.
He never once mentioned cognac.
Yeah.
So they're thinking the guy was just drinking cognac at his grave.
Well,
and
I mean,
he was always interrupted by the police or somebody, and then he would be chased around.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know what you're talking about. And it's weird, too, because, I mean, Poe was an alcoholic, and he liked absinthe, and he also did.
Yeah, absinthe, right.
He also did drugs. I mean, he was an addict. There was no question about it. So I guess maybe this guy thought cognac. But no, you're right. I mean, I don't think Poe never once mentioned cognac. I don't know if historically, because Poe's my favorite writer. I don't know if historically.
Right, I remember that, too, yeah. And but you used to see that every year, because I used to teach Poe, and every year they would have, on his birthday, 1809, they would have an article about that in the paper.
Yeah.
But now you don't see it anymore.
No, it's so true. I wonder if it's still going on, you would think.
Yeah, that guy must be dead now, whoever was doing it.
Maybe somebody picked up, somebody else can pick up the tradition now.
I know. Yeah. Same thing goes on with Joan of Arc on her grave in ruin, too. Mm. There's a sword or something.
Something like that. Okay. All right, Paxton, thanks, buddy.
You bet.
All right,
Take care.
All right. Hey, listen, let me explain something for people who are interested in going to Poe's grave. Have you ever been to Baltimore, Dan?
I have not.
Roger, you've been to Baltimore?
Not that I can remember, no.
Okay.
No.
All right. Well, Poe's grave is located it's in Baltimore. And I will say this, not in the best of neighborhoods. I just know ahead of time if you're gonna go to check out Poe's grave, it's not in the greatest of neighborhoods. I just will tell you that right now. It's worth going to, though. But I also want to explain something. Because when you first walk into the courtyard where the church is, you first walk in, there's a big monument to Poe. Beautiful, four-sided monument to Poe with him and a bust and all that kind of stuff. That's not his grave. Don't be confused. That's just a little monument. You got to walk around to the back of the church. And then his grave is, you can see his grave there. And it's not a big, crazy stone. You know what I mean? There's a raven on it. But it's in the back. It's like you have to go around the back. So don't, like, if you walk up there and you see the big monument, and you go, here it is, that's not it. You want to go and see his actual grave, you got to go around the back of the church. Just giving some people a little notice on that.
Is there anything special around it, like a roped-off area?
No. You got to dig right through. There's weeds and all. Yeah,
Oh, really?
It's virtually unkempt.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. No, it was cool as hell. I mean, he's my favorite writer. So that was when we got to Baltimore. You know, that's the first thing we did. My friends and I, you know, we checked into the hotel and said, I have to go see Poe's grave, and I got to see it right now. That was the first thing we did. And that was the first year, Dan, that was the first year at Camden Yards.
Oh, nice.
And we got tickets. I don't know how the hell we got tickets, but we got tickets. And that was the first year. That's a beautiful park. That is a beautiful park. And that was the year after the new Comiskey was opened. And everybody talked about what a disaster it was. So they completely redesigned what they were going to do, and they made Camden Yards. So Camden Yards is the result of how bad New Comiskey was. Yeah. But so, yeah, that's the first thing we did. And the first thing we had like a day off, and we were on our way to Baltimore, so we stopped off at D.C. So we didn't go to the Capitol. We didn't go to the Smithsonian immediately. We didn't go, you know, to the Lincoln Memorial. The first thing we did when we got to D.C., and I insisted upon it, was we went to the Exorcist stairs. We went to Georgetown, and we went to the Exorcist stairs, the stairs that are featured in the movie The Exorcist. That was like, we have to go there now. I don't care. Smithsonian. I want to go to the Exorcist stairs. That's the first place we went. It's weird, too, because the house, you know, because in the movie, the house where Reagan and Chris live, her bedroom window is obviously right outside because, you know, Jason Miller busts through the window and rolls down the stairs at the end of the movie. The house that they actually used is like three blocks away. So I'm like, what? He got some serious flight. When he jumped out that window, man, he flew in the air for three blocks before he hit the stairs.
Well, he was possessed.
Yeah, he was possessed. That's true. He was. But no, it was a little weird because when we got to the steps, I'm like, okay, clearly these are the steps. I mean, because there's no mistaking that set of stairs. I mean, it's just insane. And it's there, and I'm like, well, where the hell's the house? And I had to ask a local. I'm like, where's the house that Jason Miller jumped out of the stairs? He's like, it's three blocks down this way. And there it was. There was the house, and that was cool. But it's really confusing when you've seen the movie 75,000 times, and you expect, you know, I expected Jason Miller to come flying out the window while we were standing there.
Was there a house at the top of those? Oh, nothing.
No. I mean, no. Well, there's like a courtyard.
Oh, okay.
And a little. And there's a house a little bit further away, but it's not that house. That house was like around the corner, three blocks down. The house they used in the movie.
Yeah.
But my friend Mike Meredith, who I worked with a lot at the Factory Theater, we wrote a lot of plays together, and he acted with him and stuff. He's from D.C. And apparently, the Exorcist steps is where people go to blow weed. That's what it is. It's like a burnout hangout. Like if you're gonna go blow, weed, you go to the Exorcist steps. And we went at the bottom of the steps. There was like a I don't know what's there now. This was in '92, so it was a long time ago. But there's like a sort of like an empty sort of like garage. It's creepy, and there's spray painted stuff all over the wall. So people would just go there, like punks would go there. They'd blow weed, smoke marijuana, spray paint stuff, and then leave. That's the legacy of the Exorcist steps. So that's a tradition. When you're in D.C., you blow weed at the Exorcist steps.
There you go.
We didn't do that, though, however. My friends and I just took a bunch of pictures and hung out.
Well, you were busy. You had a lot of stuff to do.
And I also don't blow weed, so that's another,
there you go.
Another reason. What some of the guys that were with me did, but I was not one of them.
Okay.
All right. We have to break. We'll come back and wrap up the traditions. I'll pick some special ones from the remaining states, and we'll do that right after we take a break here. Hey, we got weather and traffic, right, Dan? Is that what's going on?
That would be correct.
Yeah. And I got a pretty good amount of sleep last night, but I'm feeling, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, you know.
Extra hour. There you go. Well, that was 815 area code on Wildcard Wednesday requesting Johnny Cash with Cocaine Blues. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. After the 4 o'clock news, we're going to talk about some of the coolest chicks in rock, some of the best rock front women. That's coming up. But right now we're talking about weird traditions in different states. Massachusetts has the ugly sweater run. That happens in early December. As if wearing an ugly sweater over the holidays wasn't punishment enough, in Massachusetts, people pull them on for a 3.1-mile race. Runners who finish the race are rewarded with a Kahlua cocktail. You get Kahlua for running around in a bad sweater? And you get an ugly hat to complement the ugly sweater. How about this one? In Minnesota, raffling meat. This happens once a week. Raffling meat. He was also on the morning zoo I was in. Yeah, man, raffling meat. He did sports. Meat raffles are part of the social fabric of Minnesota. How did I not know this? Where's Cochrane? Because Cochrane spent a significant amount of time.
Right.
He must have raffled off some meat.
Right. Him and Alexander O'Neill.
Him and Alexander O'Neill would
go to the meat raffles on Friday.
Come on, Cochrane. Let me know about meat raffling. Come on, Steve. Meat raffling. Yeah, so that's the fabric of Minnesota. They have been held in the state for years. These raffles, which are social events like bingo, got their start in local bars. In recent years, the event has become so popular, very popular in trending waterholes in Minnesota cities. I seriously have to ask Cochran about that.
I'm like, how are we going to remember to ask him on Thursday morning?
I have to remember to ask him on Thursday morning. Remind me, because I appear on Steve's show every Thursday at 6:20. By the way, participants pony up $1 for a ticket for a chance to win a packet of meat. I love the way that's termed. It's not specific. Here's a packet of meat. We don't know what kind it is. Enjoy your packet of meat. Missouri has the Testicle Festival, but we've already heard that one. Nevada has the Burning Man Festival. Yeah, that's fun. A lot of hygiene there. In New Hampshire, they have the UFO Festival. Why in New Hampshire? Aren't they supposed to do that kind of stuff at Area 51?
Right, you'd imagine.
Let's see. In New Mexico, New York, SantaCon. This is during the holiday season. Like the tree lighting at Rockefeller Center and the Christmas Spectacular at Radio City Music Hall, Christmas in New York would not be Christmas without SantaCon. Hundreds of people dressed as Santa Claus come to New York City on the weekend before Christmas and do a Yuletide pub crawl. Oh, God. How much vomit in fake beards are going to be there? You can't bring those beards back. Like, if you rented a costume, that beard's yours, pal. How about this? In North Carolina, they have the National Hollerin' Contest. You know, Johnny Carson would... Oh, it's mentioned here. The National Hollerin' Contest pays homage to a unique form of communication used in the southeast part of the United States. Starting in 1969, the contest was annually held at Spivey's Corner, North Carolina. Several times the winner would appear on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. The event was discontinued after 47 years in 2016, but it has been revived in Hope Mills, North Carolina. But yeah, I remember when Johnny would have them on, and they would scream. That was all it is, you would holler. Let's see. North Dakota has the Redneck Relay at their state fair. You have to do the moonshine spit, the corn toss, planting one's face in a pie to find candy, and carrying a watermelon slathered in Crisco. In Oklahoma, on the first Saturday in May, you build a giant onion burger. It's been a tradition since the early 1900s. Pennsylvania Groundhog Day, we all know about that. Let's see. South Carolina, during the full moon, you rub bone on warts. In South Carolina, people have an interesting remedy for warts. They believe that if you rub a chicken bone on warts and then bury the bone during a full moon, the warts will be gone by the next full moon. How does someone come up with that? Because that's pretty damn specific, don't you think?
Right.
Yeah, I got a wart. I got to wait till the full moon, rub a chicken bone on it, bury it, and then the next full moon I won't have any warts. Let's see. South Dakota, they have the mashed potato wrestling contest, which happens in August. It's potato day in August, and one of the highlights is the mashed potato wrestling. And you wrestle in a large pit of mashed potatoes.
How do you just not eat your way out? Just
it's true. As long as there's no butter on them, Dan, you'll be fine.
That's fine.
Texas is the massive bat takeoff. Oh, this is what we were talking about. So a caller called up and said that they were in a cave. And when the dawn came, the bats came flying back. How about this one? The naked bike ride. Vermont has the naked bike ride. We do too. In Utah, they have leaving love notes in the desert. You can do that anytime. They have their affection for their loved ones by putting notes in the sand along Route 80. Well, geez, can you imagine how many notes there are, considering everybody in Utah is married to 15 people?
Boy, you needed the drum hit on that one.
Where's the rim shot?
Hold on a minute. Wait, hold it. Hold on a minute.
Roger, it's been a while since you've done the overnight, so you forget that Nick has to construct the drum kit every time.
I didn't know that. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot.
Yeah. West Virginia. You got to get to West Virginia in early September for the Roadkill Cook-Off. You know, Esmeralda should go to that.
Yeah.
Every September, Marlington, West Virginia plays host to the Roadkill Cook-Off. People can sample the culinary splendor of squirrel gravy and deer sausage, foods derived from the animals that met an untimely end along the highways. In previous years, the cook-off has been shown on the Food Network, the Travel Channel, and Discovery Channel.
I don't know if I actually want an answer to this, but how many squirrels do you need to make squirrel sausage?
No, squirrel gravy.
Oh, squirrel gravy. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Deer sausage.
Deer sausage, I got you.
And then finally, in Wyoming, see, now I have to go to this. It's the Cheyenne Zombie Fest on September 15th. It might not be the zombie apocalypse, but the Zombie Fest is a big deal in Cheyenne as the undead take over downtown. Features the annual event, including an undead fashion show, a zombie prom, and a walking ghost tour of downtown Cheyenne. Proceeds go to Cheyenne's traditional event, and it goes to the Cheyenne Little Theater. You know, in Toronto, they have a zombie walk.
Mm.
My ex-wife Heather went twice, and it's awesome. They do a zombie walk here. They do a zombie pub crawl here in Chicago, and it's in Andersonville. It starts in Andersonville. Like I remember sitting at Simon's, and a bunch of zombies came in. And I was like, "This is awesome." but really quickly, what's amazing about the zombie walk in Toronto, of which Heather went up to twice, and she dressed up like a zombie and did the whole thing, and you stay in character. You start one place, but you end up at a pub called the Winchester.
Ah. Very nice.
There's, yeah. And well, for people who don't know the Winchester, sorry, I'm just assuming that everybody knows Shaun of the Dead as well as I do. The pub in the Winchester in the movie Shaun of the Dead is the Winchester. So, all right, very cool. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, we're going to jump in talk about some really cool rock chicks and rock front women. And if you want to join us with your thoughts, 312-981-7200.